Okay, right. So, let's see where we are.
We caused him threatened with an Ofsted, so she's... Probably trying to prepare certain things now.
Oh, the hell, hold on.
She did it on purpose, she thinks, without pepper.
Now, so this week on Shabbat in Shul, they're going to be reading two Torah scrolls. And the first Torah scroll is going to be the Seder of the week. And then they'll have another second Torah scroll, which is like countdown to Pesach kind of thing. So the key verse is this verse number 2. But let's start at verse number 1 in the Torah over here. Vayomer Hashem al Moshe vel Aaron. God said to Moses and Aaron, Be'eretz Mitzrayim, in the land of Egypt, Le'emor say, Hachodesh hazeh lachem. This month should be for you, Rosh Chodeshim, the head of the months. Now that means this month is the month of Nisan, when the Jews went out of Egypt. So now it's really just, they went out of Egypt on the 15th of the month, like the 14th of Nisan. They took the Paschal lamb, and at midnight, after midnight, or early in the morning, they went free. So we're just getting up to that, because now God is saying, this is going to be the first of the months. Rishon Hulachem, this month, Nisan, should be the first, L'chod She'a Shana, for the months of the year. And we're now at the beginning of Nisan, and then he's telling them that everyone on the 10th of the month should take a lamb, and that's going to be the Paschal lamb. So it's like really gearing up for going out, going out of Egypt. So that's why this Torah scroll, this second Torah reading, is read. It's read on the Shabbat that comes before the new moon of Nisan. So the new moon of Nisan will be next week. So it's so this is getting us all in the mood for Pesach. So that's where the discourse takes off, and it focuses. It was said in 1966. And it was the same setup, the same sedra on the week on Shabbat, the same sedra, V'yakhel Pekudei. And also it was this second Torah reading called Parshat HaChodesh, the chapter about the month, the day of blessing the new moon of Nisan, which is what this Shabbat we will be doing, blessing the new moon of the upcoming month Nisan. So this was in 1966, and it's not a... edited discourse. This wasn't edited by the Rebbe, but it's been edited by a team of scholars who've managed to write this very informative commentary and put footnotes and so on, you know, with the sources. So it's a very, very well fleshed out discourse, and I don't know how far exactly we'll get in it, but it's very beautiful ideas. It's talking about the spiritual dimension of the Exodus, of going free from Egypt. So that's what we're going to try to explore. Yom ba ya 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 ba yom ba bo ya ya ra yom ba bo ya ba ya ba ya ba yom ba bo Right. HaChodesh hazeh lachem rosh chadoshim. This month should be for you the first, the head of the months. Omevi kvot kdushat admo ha-tzemach tzedek. Now the tzemach tzedek, that means the third Lubavitcher Rebbe. He quotes b'mar maro in his discourse, dibur matchil zeh, which begins in this way, mishnat tafresh kavav, which was in the year 1866, Sha'amaro called him Histalkuto, which he said before he passed away. Now, the point is, he passed away on the 13th of Nisan, 1866. And this discourse is like, by having it this month should be for you, so it's shortly before the new moon of Nisan. So in other words, this was said something like 2 or 3 weeks before he passed away. That's the discourse that's being quoted, which is an interesting thing. So miss out the brackets. So he quotes if we look at the, the lines, like the numbers next to the middle, you know what I mean? The numbers next to the middle, so it's line 8. He quotes Masha Katub Bamidrash, what it says in the Midrash, HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem, this month is for you, Hadahu Dichtiv, this is what the Midrash says, that's what it's written, Ashrei Hagoy Asher Hashem Elokav, happy is the nation that God is its God. Ha'am Bachal L'Nachalolo, the nation, the people whom God chose for his inheritance. All right, then the Midrash goes on. Mishabacha HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ba'olamo, when God chose his world, Kavabo Roshe Chadoshim B'Shanim, he fixed in it new moons of the month and years, maybe like new years, the new moon for the month and the new year of the year. And when he chose Jacob and his children, Kavabo, then he fixed in the calendar, so to speak, Rosh Chodesh Shel Geula, the new moon of redemption, Shebo Nigalu Yisrael Mimitzrayim, on which, or in which, the month of redemption on, in which the Jews were redeemed from Egypt, Uvo Atidim Lehigael, and it's in the same month that they will in the future be redeemed. Shenem, as it says, Kimeitzeitcha me'eretz Mitzrayim, like the days of your going out of the land of Egypt, Arenu Niflaot, God will show the Jewish people wonders at the time of the future redemption. All right, so now this Midrash is fascinating. Trying to understand what it says and the way the discourse explains it. You see, you've got the idea of God creating the world. But there's a sense in which that's not enough. There has to be a further dimension, which is God choosing the world. So that's like another stage. Now, the way the commentary, you see, you've got this commentary down the side, the way this commentary explains that, it relates to the Kabbalistic concept of the world of chaos and the world of repair, the world of tikkun. The world of chaos is the way the world was originally created. And then comes the world of tikkun, which is the world of healing, which is a deeper dimension of world, a more positive dimension of world. So the commentary explains that's what is meant by God choosing the world. He creates the world, the universe is one thing, is one step. But then he chooses it, means that it moves on to this stage. It's not just a world of chaos, it's a world of tikkun, it's a world of repair. But then there's another stage, and that is the choosing of Jacob and his children, that's us, the Jewish people, that we've got some significant role in the whole plot, in the whole drama. We've got a significant role. So when we are chosen, then that sort of shifts around various of the relationships in existence with God. And we come into the picture. And then we have the special quality of the month of Nisan, that suddenly the month of Nisan, when Pesach is, when we originally went out of Egypt, suddenly becomes very significant. It wasn't significant before. The general idea of when the world was created, when was the world created, which month of the year, like to we see it. How do we see the world?
Tishri.
Tishri, yeah. When it's Rosh Hashanah, when it's the new year, we blow the shofar. You know, that's all like remembering and thinking about the creation of the world, God creating the world. So God created the world in Tishri.
6 months earlier, isn't it? Or later.
Whichever. Yeah, whichever way you look at it. Yeah. From Nisan, it's 7 months till Tishri. If Nisan is the first month, then Tishri is the seventh. So what it expresses in this discourse, we may or may not get there, you know, all the way through, but what it expresses is the idea that at the beginning, when God created the world, it was in Tishrei, it was, and that Tishrei was the first month. That would really be considered the first month. That was when God created the world. However, there was another stage of existence that was launched by the fact of our redemption from Egypt. By the fact that we, the Jewish people, that God chose Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and we are the descendants of Jacob, and we were there in Egypt. And then comes all the stunning events about us leaving Egypt, which has a very wide significance, as we'll see in a minute, hopefully. So that idea of us leaving Egypt, that brought about a transformation in the whole perspective on existence, so that instead of Tishrei being the first month, Nisan became the first month, the month that we went out of Egypt. And then Tishri becomes the seventh month. So there's a kind of an interplay about the whole nature of existence. What is existence all about? And we are some essential part of the drama. As the Lubavitcher Rebbe once said to someone, you know, about the special nature of the Jewish people, he said, "It may sound chauvinistic, but we didn't invent it." You know, like that's what these Torah teachings are. So we didn't invent the Torah teachings. Torah teachings come from God. So we've got this interplay, as it were, which it's like partly it's hinted at by quoting the Midrash. I was just spelling it out a bit more from what it says later on. Bet. Line 14. Umamshich b'maimer, and it continues in the discourse of the Tzemach Tzedek of the third Lubavitcher Rebbe 2 or 3 weeks before he passed away. Sheyesh lahaktim hakitzur me'adrush v'torah or. In order to understand this, one has to consider a brief summary of a teaching which is there in Torah or, which is a book of Hasidic teachings that already existed in his time. He in fact had edited it with teachings by his father, by his grandfather, Rabbi Shneur Zalman. Ala pasuk, on the verse, Lachein emor livnei Yisrael, ani Hashem, therefore say to the Jewish people, I am God, v'hotzeiti etzchem, and I will take you out of Egypt. Shemevi Sham Maimer Rabotenu Zal, he quotes there the saying of the sages, Maskirin Yetziat Mitzrayim Baleilot. One speaks about, one remembers the going out of Egypt at night. Now, there's a whole interesting thing about we're supposed to remember the going out of Egypt, we're supposed to remember it every day. Now, do we also have to remember it every night? So there's the idea that as well as mentioning it in the day, the Hainu Gambalelot, that also at the night we mention the going out of Egypt. It has to do with various halachic things. One of the things is, do we say the three paragraphs of the Shema at the in the Maariv prayer, in the evening prayer? The third paragraph talks about tzitzit, but it also mentions going out of Egypt. So we say that we do say this third paragraph in the evening because it mentions going out of Egypt. So that concept. V'tzarech lahavin. Now we have to understand. Ma nishtana nes yitzit Mitzrayim. What's so different about the miracle of the going out of Egypt? Mikol anisim, of all the other miracles in the Torah is full of miraculous events. Shelos hanu aleihem, we haven't been told that we have to lahaskiram kol kaf, we have to remember them so much. What's so important about remembering going out of Egypt? not only once a year at Pesach, but even more, we're supposed to mention it every single day, as we do in various ways. And one of them is by the third paragraph of the Shema. Given this question, why is the going out of Egypt so significant? The Tzemach Tzedek, the third Lubavitch Rebbe, starts explaining the concept of going out of Egypt. That about this, our sages of blessed memory said, Bechol dor vador, this is line 21, in every generation, Chayev Adam lirot et atzmo, each person should consider himself, Bechol yom, every single day, Baboker uba'erev, in the morning and in the evening, ki'ilu hu et yitziat Mitzrayim, as if now is the time for going out of Egypt. So in other words, we have to remember the going out of Egypt every single day. Now it's interesting, it says this idea, it quotes this idea in Tanya. Talks about how we have to go out of Egypt every single day. This is in chapter 47 of Tanya. And it explains how we go out of Egypt every day. Every day, you see, what is our personal Egypt? The animal soul traps our divine soul, limits our divine soul. The thing about the word Egypt, Mitzrayim, which means the country Egypt, you can give it a slightly different pointing, and it's meitzarim, limitations. So the idea of being in Egypt means being limited, and we go out of these limitations. So the way it explains it in Tanya is that the limitation is the animal soul, which sort of surrounds the divine soul, diverts the energy of the divine soul. And going out of Egypt, how does the divine soul go out of Egypt? Well, it starts doing something spiritual. It learns Torah, for example, like we're learning now. So at this minute, our divine soul is less hampered by the animal soul. The animal soul can be churning away in the background, but it doesn't bother the divine soul. It's just focusing, trying to understand what we're studying. Or it could be in prayer or saying the Shema. In that chapter 47 of Tanya, it focuses on saying the Shema. The moment when you say the Shema is actually a personal going free from Egypt at that moment. That's what it says in Tanya. Now here, the third Lubavitcher Rebbe, the Tzemach Tzedek, he is being quoted, what he says about this whole idea. He takes it on a much grander scale. And it makes me think, like he's a few weeks or a couple of weeks before he passed away. So it's as if he's like just thinking in much more, you know, not just global, but stellar, cosmic terms. He's thinking in like cosmic terms. And so here, there comes an explanation of the going out of Egypt in cosmic terms. And that's really the focus of the discourse. Going out of Egypt in cosmic terms. You got going out of Egypt literally from the physical land of Egypt, south, west of Israel. There is going out of the personal Egypt inside, and then there's going out of the cosmic Egypt. So that's what we're looking at now, the cosmic Egypt. Okay, let's see if we're going to be able to do it. So that's line 20. So the Tzemach Tzedek starts explaining the concept of going out of Egypt. We got further than that. We're up to line 23. There is also the concept of going out of Egypt, beruchnion, spiritually, lamaila, above, in cosmic terms, ba'olamot ha'elyonim, in the upper worlds. Ha'kamochein, and similarly, lamata benefesh, there's also below, in the soul, ba'avodata adam, in the service of the individual. So the service of the individual is like what it says in Tanya, and then there's this higher dimension as well. Va'inin bazan, what this means is, dehine k'tiv, It says in another verse, Ma yafitu mana amt ava batanugim. That's a very beautiful verse from the Song of Songs. How beautiful you are, how pleasant you are, ava, love, batanugim, in delight. Now, what that is explained to mean is that from the fact of us being the Jewish people here in this world, keeping Torah mitzvah, we feel this tremendous love, we feel this tremendous delight, and so this is shemizena selamata benefesh adam. From this there's achieved below in the soul of a person inyana simcha, the idea of joy, b'kiyuma Torah mitzvah, through keeping Torah and mitzvah. The very fact of keeping Torah mitzvah gives us a tremendous joy. Simcha shel mitzvah, the joy of keeping a mitzvah. There's a concept that when we keep mitzvah, any mitzvah, we should be filled with tremendous joy. Kamosha katuv, as it's written, Avadata et Hashem elakecha besimcha v'tuv levav mirov kol. This is a quote where the verse is actually, the context is something negative, that the Jewish people are being punished, and they're told they're being punished. Why? Because you did not serve God with joy and a happy heart when you had everything. So from this the sages learn that if you want to serve God, you should serve God with joy and with a happy heart. That's the way you should do it. Shezel mitzad godel ma'alat gilu or ein sof baruch hu. Why is it that the person feels the tremendous joy when they fulfill a mitzvah? So that is a kind of a ideal concept, that the very spiritual person, when he does any mitzvah, puts on tefillin in the morning, gives charity, lights a Hanukkah lamp, whatever it is that he's doing, he's filled with a tremendous joy, you know, charismatic joy. Very often that's the, you know, like the relationship of Hasidim and the Rebbe, you know, like you see the Rebbe doing a particular mitzvah and you see the power, the spirituality that goes into that. So, and that's inspiring to the individual, that the individual should also have something of that joy and inspiration. So this is the joy of keeping a mitzvah. Shezeu, that it should be betuv le shezeu mitzad godel ma'alat gilu or. That's because of the tremendous revelation of radiance of Ein Sof Baruch Hu, of the Infinite, may He be blessed. Lamata, here below, shenase, which is achieved al yedei kiyum haTorah mitzvot, through keeping Torah mitzvot. So it's really like a psychedelic situation. You know, when a person is, like, let's say us, learning Torah. So you could have a kind of a psychedelic portrait, picture of us learning Torah with like tremendous radiance, like halos, you know, like fire, you know, in the words of Torah. It's an incredible thing. Normally people just, they don't notice it, but they're not even aware of it. They don't think about it. But in fact, learning Torah is an incredible thing. It says about a certain sage in the Talmud of the Mishnah, when he was studying, a bird flying across his head would fall down. Like it was as if there was a tremendous heat of radiance, energy of some kind. And, you know, the bird would be affected. Cooked. When,
Cooked.
Cooked.
I had a feeling it was.
Yeah, well, something like that. I mean, it was like a very, very dynamic, very dynamic thing. It speaks in the Talmud about a group of people learning together. Fire was going out of the mouth of one person, and fire was coming out. You know, like, you know. But normally we don't see it. But that's what the energy of Torah is, and all the mitzvot. Any mitzvah that we do, there is really tremendous, tremendous energy, which if you have just a glimpse of this energy, or you think about the energy without having a glimpse of it, it's an inspiring and exciting thing. The early Hasidim used to get so excited about something like praying to God, that they would behave in what was considered an excessive way, like they would do cartwheels in the synagogue, you know, you know, or somersault, or, you know, that's just filled with such enthusiasm. And really, that's the way it is. That, you know, that's what Jewish teaching is. It's an incredible excitement. Only normally, you know, in the social context, you know, especially living in England, you know, it's all sort of a bit damped. But really, there is this tremendous joy which is there. Now, this joy in keeping Torah mitzvah, shehu na'ale yoteh mirov kol, it's higher than a term that was used before, the abundance of everything. It's higher than abundance of everything. See, there should be joy with a good heart more than the abundance of everything. Now, what does the abundance of everything mean? It's a kind of code word. Shehein tanugei olam haba. This abundance of everything means the delights of the world to come. Now, the delights of the world to come, dahainu, that means kol ha'tanugim haruchniyim, all the spiritual delights, the Gan Eden HaTachton of the lower Garden of Eden, the Gan Eden HaElyon and of the higher Garden of Eden. So let's just try and look at it diagrammatically. So if we have going to be black here. So here's our world, right? Okay, artist representation. And then we have a higher level, which we can call the lower Gan Eden, right? Mm-hmm. And this is like really in the Sefirot. And then we have a higher level, which is the higher Gan Eden. So that's like a higher level of the Sefirot. And then we have beyond that, we have the infinite Ein Sof. Right? So what it's saying is that there is Rov Kol, there's this abundance of everything, which is like the soul enjoying the lower Garden of Eden, or even the higher Garden of Eden. But much, much higher than that is the infinite. And so therefore, the joy, that we should have when we do a mitzvah, should be a joy which relates to the infinite, higher than the joys of the lower Garden of Eden, or even of the higher Garden of Eden. It should be an absolutely exalted sense of connection with the infinite, which takes us beyond this. You see, these are very wonderful, but they're seen as limitations. They're seen as finite in comparison with what we're trying to get to, which is something infinite. And so being able to have the delights which are on this level is a kind of Egypt in comparison with that higher level. And what we're trying to do is get out of Egypt. Now, the delights of the lower Garden of Eden and the higher Garden of Eden, in line 7 or line 6, and as it's explained elsewhere, Shabarov called that when it says the abundance of everything, and it's including this lower Garden of Eden and higher Garden of Eden, Nichlolim kol hagiluyim, it includes all the spiritual revelations, Sheyiyu, which will be there, b'meshech, during the full extent of existence. Now, funny thing is, in the Kabbalah, there is a concept of a final extent to existence. Existence doesn't go on forever and ever and ever. It's got a final limit. Now, the final limit, to explain what the final limit is, what's the Jewish year now?
5773.
Okay, you're living ahead. So 5773 is the Jewish year, which our tradition is, that's the year from creation. 5,773. So that means we're in the sixth millennium, right? When it gets to 6,000, that'll be the beginning of the seventh millennium. Now, and before then, the Messiah will have come and the temple will be built and everything else. So these 1,000 years, these millennia, are seen like the days of the week. So we're on Friday, in other words. We're on the sixth millennium. Friday afternoon, right, coming towards Shabbat. And Shabbat will be the seventh millennium. Now that is one, what's called Shemitah cycle. The 7,000 years is a Shemitah cycle, like the 7 years, and then the 6 years, and then the seventh year, the ground in Israel has to lie fallow. So that's the same kind of thing with the world, that there's 6,000 and then the 7,000. Now that's one Shemitah. Now in terms of the Shemitah in Israel with the land, although we don't do it this way today, but it used to be done in the time of the temple and it will be, is the idea of the Jubilee year. So when is the Jubilee year?
49th or 50th.
The 50th, yeah. So you have 7 years, the first Shemitah, then another 7 years. So when there's been seven Shemitah, which is 49 years, then the 50th year is the Jubilee. So the same concept is applied cosmically, as it were. You've got 7,000 years is one Shemitah. So if you have seven of those, that's 49,000 years. And so the 50th thousand is the Jubilee thousand. So that's called a Yovel. So that's 50,000 years is one Jubilee of thousand, you know, of in time, in cosmic terms. The extent of the world is 50,000 Jubilees. So that means it's 50,000 times 50,000. Let's see if we can work that out. So 5 fives are 25. Then we put three noughts there, and then another three noughts. So we've got
25 million.
No, wait a second, that's not enough. It's 50,000. We have to add another two noughts. Okay, so now we start. So that's 2,500 million years. Mm-hmm. Right. We're catching up with the science textbooks. So 2,500 million years is the extent of the existence of the world. 2,500 million years. We're right at the beginning. We're in the 6,000. But there's all this to go. Now the idea is that at every stage, everything in existence ascends to a higher and higher level. So the lower Garden of Eden in this thousand will be like higher in the next thousand or in the next Jubilee, you know, in the next Shemitah. It'll always be higher and higher and higher. So the delight of the lower Garden of Eden and of the higher Garden of Eden is always getting more and more and more. And over the course of 2,500 million years, which is 50,000 Jubilees, it gets more and more. But nonetheless, what the discourse is saying is that level of delight is limited compared with the absolute infinite, which is beyond. So our concept of Egypt is sort of expanding bigger and bigger and bigger. You know, we've now got the joys of the lower and the higher Garden of Eden over the next 2,500 million years, which is like incredible joyfulness, but that is Egypt, is limitation compared with the ultimate infinite. So the going out of Egypt means that we go beyond that limitation. So
do they get all this from Kabbalah or something?
Yeah. Yeah. This comes from the Kabbalah. Yeah. I mean, the idea of the 2,500 million years, the Tzemach Tzedek, I remember studying this in the Tzemach Tzedek's writing, the third Lubavitch Rebbe, and he was quoting some book, you know, it comes from some earlier Kabbalistic book. Now, line 8 on this page, Chet, the Inyan Zeh Naaseh, and how is this achieved? Al Yedei Hitbonenut, through the contemplation of Bamashe Katuv, of what it's written, the verse, Ki Nisgav Shmo Levado, his name alone is exalted, Hodo Al Eretz V'Shamayim, his glory is on heaven and earth. So now we have the idea of heaven and earth, and the glory of God. There's the glory of God on heaven and earth, and there's God's name, which is very exalted. Hainu, that means, Shekol ma shenimshachu meyeh, everything which shines, ale eretz v'shamayim, on the earth and the heaven. Now, earth and heaven, normally we would take, the earth is this, the earth, and heaven is that. But here it says, no, eretz egan eden natachton. When it says earth, it means the lower garden of Eden. V'shamayim ze gan edna elyon. And when it says heaven, it's the higher garden of Eden. Eino ela hodo v'zivo shel shmo. That is only a gleam from the divine name. Haino he'ara bilvad mibchinat shmo. Just a gleam of radiance from the name of God. Shehi midat malchuto, which is the quality of God's kingship. Shenikcha shmo melech aleim, because his name is called the king over them. Now, so the name, the divine name, we're putting it in over here. Because really the infinite is beyond the divine name. But the divine name is infinitely exalted beyond these lower levels. And that's what I mean, it's the king, it's completely beyond. Ki gam shemo nisgav levado, because the name is utterly exalted, this divine name. V'rak hodo v'zivo shel shmo, and only a gleam of his name. Hu hanimshach u'meyer, comes and shines al eretz v'shamayim, on the earth and the heaven, meaning the lower Garden of Eden and the higher Garden of Eden. So, what we're sort of doing is entering into this perspective where the earth has sort of dwindled away. It's like a grain of sand. Now we're talking about the immensities of these spiritual realms, the lower Garden of Eden, the higher Garden of Eden. And these, we can sometimes see them in terms of Sfirot, you know, as if we're ascending to higher levels of the Sfirot. Right, so this quality of understanding, that represents the Garden of Eden. And so there's the lower Garden of Eden, the higher Garden of Eden, you know, like that's going to higher and higher levels. But when we're speaking about, now, you see, the thing about this diagram is that it interfolds. You see, you can go up to the highest level and then you find you're down here again, you know, but on a much higher level. Now, the name of God is at this level. The name of God is here. And you can go all the way higher up beyond the name as well. And even then, when you're talking about the name, it is only a gleam coming from the name and making the garden, the higher Garden of Eden and the lower Garden of Eden. So we are really talking about very, very exalted levels. Okay, so I think we'll miss out the rest of this paragraph. Till on the next page we go to we'll go to line 8 on the next paragraph, or line 7. V'zeh shekiyumat Torah mitzvot. That is why the keeping of Torah mitzvot hu na'ale yoter, is more exalted, merov kol, than the abundance of everything. Sheheim ha'tanugim de Gan Eden ha'tachlon, which is the delight of the lower Garden of Eden, the Gan Eden ha'elyon, and of the higher Garden of Eden. Because these pleasures, these delights, only come from a gleam of the divine name. But when you're talking about actual keeping mitzvah, when we keep a mitzvah, we say that God made us holy with his commandments. Every mitzvah usually begins with a blessing like that, like putting on tefillin. We say, blessed are you, O God, who sanctified us with his commandments, commanded us to put on tefillin, something like that. So, b'mitzvotav mamash, with God's commandments, shebehem alubash ein sof baruch hu, in which is enclosed the radiance of the infinite, ba'atzmo b'chvodo mamash, in its very essence. So when we're doing a mitzvah, we're actually imbued with this infinite radiance. And through thinking that, we, for example, now, this minute, we're studying Torah. What an amazing thing. It's just enough to blow you out of your mind. Yismach v'yagel, a person is filled with rejoicing and happiness, ba'or en sof baruch hu, thinking about the radiance of the infinite, hamit pashet u'mislabesh, which is expressed, it's enclosed, be'esek ha-Torah u'mitzvot, in our activity of studying Torah or keeping mitzvot, shehu l'mayla, which is higher, me'or v'agilui, than the radiance and the revelation, shemeya al-eretz v'shamayim, which shines on earth and heaven, which means, in this case, be'gan Eden ha-tachdon, earth is the lower Garden of Eden, and the higher Garden of Eden means heaven. So in other words, the person, let's make a tiny little stick person over here, is a stick person. So that person is keeping a mitzvah. So because he's keeping a mitzvah, or she's keeping a mitzvah, there is this tremendous, don't quite know how to get this radiance down to him, there's this tremendous connection with divine radiance going right up to the source of everything, beyond all these other levels. And we are doing that because here we are in this world and we're able to keep a mitzvah. It's a very life-affirming thing, actually, because we can only really keep these mitzvot while we're in the world. So being here, you know, it could be with the most terrible difficulties, God forbid. But the fact is that over here we're able to keep a mitzvah and we're able to break out of this Egypt. Otherwise, there's this huge, immense prison. It's enormous, but it's a prison. It's limited. Once you see that it's limited. There's a writer called Dostoevsky, Fyodor Dostoevsky. So there's a Jewish writer who was like discussing Dostoevsky's life. So Dostoevsky, when he was a young man, he was involved in some kind of, you know, early socialist type movement. As a result, he got put in prison. He was in a labor camp. And his very first book is a description of his experiences in prison. One of those experiences is particularly interesting because there was a Jewish man in the prison as well. And one day, and this Jewish man used to pray every day in Talit and Tefillin with great enthusiasm, as Dostoevsky describes it. And one day, an officer came over to this Jew while he was praying. and ordered him to do something. And the Jew took absolutely no notice and just went on praying with the same enthusiasm and excitement. And the officer just went away. Like he could have shot him on the spot, but he just left him alone. And Dostoevsky was very impressed with it. And then he writes it down. It's just, it's the only like non-fiction that Dostoevsky wrote, you know, this account of his stay in this prison. So anyway, Dostoevsky came out of prison and then became eventually a very famous writer. So this Jewish philosopher called Shestov is trying to analyze what makes Dostoevsky into such a powerful figure on the literary stage. He says all the time he was in prison, he was trying to get, waiting, when will he be out of prison? He wasn't condemned for very long, a year or two, something like that. He was like a young man. And finally, he was let out. He got out of prison, he think, I'm free. And suddenly he realized, the sky is a prison. He's still trapped. You know, this is the existential concept, you know, the existential trap. Existence itself is a trap. Now that fits very well with this Jewish idea of existence itself being exile or Egypt. And that what we're trying to do is get out of Egypt, break free. And the way we break free is through Torah, mitzvot, studying Torah, keeping a mitzvah, which connects us with the infinite, which is completely beyond this enormous prison. Even though it's so huge, it's still limited, and it's a prison. And so the person feels it. It's the existential trap that the person feels. So that's the amazing thing that we get through the keeping of Torah and mitzvot, that God makes us holy through his mitzvot and we're connected to the very essence of God, and this is a tremendous, tremendous joy. Now we're up to line 16. V'zeu klalut ha'inyan yetzir Mitzrayim. This in general is the whole idea of going out of Egypt, shebechol dor v'dor, which is in every generation, v'chol yom v'yom, and every day, shal yedei kiyum ha'Torah mitzvot, that through keeping the Torah and the mitzvot, shebehem lubash ein sof baruch hu, in which is enclosed the radiance of the infinite, ba'atzmo b'chvodo mamash, with his own essence and glory, na'asid ha'itziyah mikol ha'mitzarim u'gvulim, we achieve the exodus, the freedom, from all the limitations and barriers, the seder shtalshelut, of the whole realm of downchaining of worlds, which is expressed in this diagram, like these are, you know, different levels of world. The higher Garden of Eden is Bria, actually. The higher Garden of Eden is the realm called creation. And the lower Garden of Eden is the world called formation. You know, we have to consider that in terms of the four worlds, not the Sphirot, like I was saying before. But the world of formation at the lower level, the world of creation at the higher level, but we're going beyond that limitation. So, in other words, contrasting with Tanya, which talks about the going out of Egypt as our own personal struggle with our own inner evil desire, or our animal soul, and the person goes free and connects with God by saying the Shema, here we are saying, yes, it's still by saying the Shema, but we're not just going free from our own animal soul. We're going free from the whole limitation of existence. Right. It's very interesting how this discourse is sort of layered. You know, like there's one layer of consciousness, as it were, here. And now we're coming to a second layer. But are there any questions at this point?
What is Tanya?
Tanya is a book written by Rabbi Shneur Zalman, who was the first Chabad Rebbe. He passed away 1812, 1813. And Tanya is, so it's this year, is sort of 200 years from him passing away. So Tanya is a book he wrote, and which expresses in a very succinct and brief way what the whole spiritual path of life is. It's a very interesting mm-hmm. book. You can find it on the web, like also with explanations, in not just translation, but with explanations, like helping a person understand mm-hmm. what it's saying. It's a very, very beautiful work. So one of the chapters in Tanya presents the idea of the personal going out of Egypt. Okay, so now we're up to paragraph 3, Gimel, on page 10, on page 9. From this week's Tva Malchot. Ubaze Yuvan, and through this we can understand Masha Katu B'tchilat Aseret HaDibrot, what it says at the beginning of the Ten Commandments, Sheba Matan Torah, of the giving of the Torah. Now, so we're jumping to a concept of the whole idea of the giving of the Ten Commandments and the significance of the Ten Commandments. The first commandment is, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, I'm the Lord your God, Asher Tzeiticha Me'eretz Mitzrayim, we took you out of the land of Egypt. Well, everyone knows, you know, that's a very well-known line. But there's a question about it. V'yidua ha'shela. It's known, the question about this. Lomo nema. Why does it say, Asher Tzeiticha Me'eretz Mitzrayim, that I'm the Lord your God who took you out of the land of Egypt? V'lo nema she'barati shemayim ba'aretz. Wouldn't it be like more striking if it said, I am God who created heaven and earth? Isn't that a bigger thing? Shezehu peleg gadol yoter miyetzir Mitzrayim. That's a greater wonder. The idea of God creating heaven and earth, that's more stunning than taking us out of Egypt. So why doesn't it say, you know, use the grandest form? I am God who created heaven and earth. Let's move on page Yud to line 6. Acha'inyin hu, the explanation is as follows. Shebriyat shamayim ba'aretz, if God would say, I'm God who created heaven and earth, this idea of creating of heaven and earth, nimshechet mipchinat dibur elyon, that comes from divine speech. K'mayim rabotenu zichronam libracha, as our sages said, may their memory be for a blessing, Ba'asara ma'amarot nivra olam, with 10 statements the world was created. Shehi b'china achrona, that is the last level, the last sphira, b'chinat malchut, the quality of kingship. So now if we look at this chart again, you see kingship is the lowest level. And so when we talk about God creating heaven and earth, that comes from the quality of kingship, which speaks God, you know, God speaks, so to speak, and says, let there be light, let there be a firmament, all the different things going into the creation of the world. So that creation of the world is coming from here, from the lowest level. Avol, now if you go on to line 11, two words from the end of the line. Avala inyan di yetzir Mitzrayim, but the concept of going out of Egypt, hu al yedei bechinat anochi, is from the level of I, God, the very essence. Shehu kaviyachol mahuto ba'atzmuto, which is the very essence of the divine, so to speak, at the very top. So when God is saying, I am God, giving you the Torah, I am God who took you out of the land of Egypt, it's this level of God. Whereas if it would say, I am God who created heaven and earth, it would only be that lower, it's all one God, but it would be this lower aspect of God. The aspect of God which creates heaven and earth is much lower than the aspect of God which gives us Torah and Mitzvot, and the fact of giving us Torah and Mitzvot is also the fact of taking the Jewish people out of Egypt. God's relationship with the Jewish people is on a completely different dimension to God's relationship with the creation of the world. right? That's really the theme of this discourse. The difference between Tishri, when the world's created, and Nisan, when God takes us out of Egypt. So this is putting it all at a very much higher level. V'hainu, that means Lefi sheyitzir Mitzrayim, because the going out of Egypt, he hayitziyah mehametzarim ugvulim. It's the going out of the limitation, shall say the ishtalshulut, of the downchaining of the worlds. So therefore, we are breaking out of that. So the whole idea of God creating the world is on a much lower level. And so therefore it says, I'm God who took you out of Egypt. This taking us out of Egypt is really a global, cosmic, immense statement, much more than the creation of heaven and earth. Right? We originally asked, wouldn't it be a grander statement to say, I'm the Lord God who created heaven and earth? But the way that we're understanding, I'm the Lord God who took you out of the land of Egypt, that's a much bigger statement, because the taking you out of the land of Egypt is this cosmic breakthrough on an incredibly exalted level. Now, line 15 then talks about the difference between Anochi, I, which begins, see, Anochi, I am the Lord your God, begins with what letter?
Aleph,
right? Whereas creating heaven and earth is Bereshit, which begins with what letter?
Bet,
right. So it's either Aleph or Bet. So line 15, Vezel Gamachiluk, that's also the difference Shebein Aseret HaDibrot, between the Ten Commandments. Shematchinim Ba'Aleph, that begin with the letter Aleph of Anochi, Lebriyat Shemayim Ba'aretz, compared with the creation of heaven and earth, Shematchilim Matchila Ba'Beit, which begins with the letter Bet in Bereshit, in the beginning, Ki Ha'Beit Hu Be'inyan Hu Inyan B'Chochma Yivne Bayit. The Bet is the idea of with wisdom God creates his house. Bechinat ha-chokhma levada bilvad. It's only the level of wisdom. Avala Aleph, but Aleph is otiot pele. The letters of the word Aleph can be rearranged and made into another word, pei lamed Aleph. See, Aleph lamed pei is Aleph, and pei lamed Aleph is pele, which means a wonder. So the wonder is lemaile mechochma. So you see, when we're talking about the Sfirot here, on the one level there's kingship creating the world, but also there's chochma, the quality of chochma, wisdom. But higher than wisdom is this dimension which is absolutely beyond pele, pei lamed aleph, which means an amazing thing, a surprising, amazing thing. And that is the Aleph of Anochi. Right. V'zeu she'amr... Okay, Dalet. I think we'll finish soon. V'zehu she'amru chachameinu zal. And that is what our sages said. Mishabacha kadosh baruch hu ba'olamo. When God chose his world, kavabo roshei chadashim, he established in it new moons. And when he chose Jacob and his children, that's us, he fixed in it, in the world, the new moon of the redemption, that means Nisan, Pesach, and the time of the future redemption. This is the general difference between the months of Tishrei and Nisan, right? So I was giving this introduction at the very beginning, so this is like where we came in. Since in Tishri the world was created, as we say, that's Rosh Hashanah, and Rosh Hashanah has to do with the creation of the world. The fixing of the new moons when God chose his world, so to speak. Tishri is the first month. And when he chose Jacob and his children, then was fixed the other month, the new moon of redemption, Shul Chodesh Nisan, which is the month of Nisan. Ve'inim b'zeh, and the idea of this is, so one second, let's just try and understand it just graphically, I think. In terms of the world, down here, the key month is Tishrei. That's the month of Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, repentance. That's what's happening over there. Whereas this higher level is Nisan, redemption, not creation, but redemption. Sounds good. Not creation, but redemption. And beyond creation. And that is on a completely higher level. And so therefore, we've got these different stages in existence. At the beginning, there's Tishrei. There's the creation of the world, and that is the fact of there being existence, and there's the existence of human beings, and human beings have to keep laws, and if they don't keep laws, then things go wrong, like we had with the flood, right before the Jewish people were there, as distinct people. And then you have the choosing of Jacob and his children, the choosing of the Jewish people, that they're going to get the Torah. That's a completely higher dimension of existence which is being revealed. That's this Nisan redemption quality which is now being revealed with its special affinity to the infinite, and it's there implanted in the Jewish people, and the Jewish people have Torah and mitzvah to keep. And so that transforms the whole mixture. It's as if everything changes, the whole gravity, the center of gravity of the whole bundle of existence changes because God chose the Jewish people to be the Jewish people. Now there's an interesting he quotes, this is on page 11, Yud Aleph at the top. He quotes a passage in the Bible, in the Book of Kings, where it speaks about the seventh month, and the Targum Yonatan, the Aramaic translation of the Bible. You see, there's Aramaic translations of the Bible. There's two types of Aramaic translation, but there are these Aramaic translations. So the Aramaic translation often gives an interesting way of understanding the text. So it says there, it's talking about the seventh month, which is Tishrei, and it says in the Aramaic translation, this is the month that originally was called the first month, and then later it was changed, and it's called the seventh month. So that intriguing Aramaic comment fits right in over here. That originally this Tishrei, when the world was first created, Tishrei was the first month, it was the month of creation. But then, when it comes out that there is the choosing of the Jewish people and the going free from Egypt, then there's a much higher dimension over there. And he then talks about different stages in creation. There's just having creation, full stop. Then there's choosing creation. Now, choosing creation, the way it's explained, is that there is a flow. You see, there's a flow down these spherot into this, like, feminine sphera. These are like masculine spherot, flowing into the feminine sphera. The idea of choosing his creation is explained over here, actually in the commentary on the side, as the point of bond. It spins off from the text, but it's fleshed out in the commentary. It's the point of joining of this aspect of the male with the feminine, with the female. within, see, the fact that there's male and female among human beings and animals and birds and plants, even, you know, whatever it might be, is because in God there are these two dimensions. There's the dimension of giving flow and the reception, and the quality of receiving flow. So that quality of giving flow, flowing into the feminine, that is achieved by the second stage of existence, which is the stage of repair, of tikkun, as opposed to the first stage, which is the stage of chaos, of tohu. Because in chaos, everything is separate. Nothing can join with anything else. But in tikkun, it's joining. It's a very interesting way of understanding it. It's like marriage. Marriage is that two people join together. Before marriage or without marriage, there's a solitariness, and the person is not able to join with anyone. There's no intimacy of any kind, real kind. And then comes the idea of marriage, of bonding together, where there's a sense of unity and of bonding, and it's this quality of connection which flows through the sefirot and bonds the whole thing together. Now that is the choosing of existence. So that means existence is shunted. So it's stage one and stage two, but it's still down here. It's, you know, we'd have to, you know, somehow put, you know, existence one and existence two. You know, like it's two stages of existence, but it's still down here. Then you have the Jewish people, the emergence of the Jewish people, that you have humanity. And in humanity as a whole, there is the choosing of Jacob and his sons, his descendants, us. The choosing of the Jewish people. So then you spark into effect this Nissan redemption, this higher level altogether. And so... you see, without the choosing of the Jewish people, the Nissan redemptive quality doesn't come out. It doesn't get shown. You've got something very exalted, but it's all over here. Or even the lower Garden of Eden, and even the higher Garden of Eden. But it's like trapped within this realm. Like, you know, this circumscribes it. And so... without the giving of the Torah, without being the special quality of the Jewish people giving the Torah, man is trapped in this existential trap. And then comes the connection with the infinite divine, which is granted through Nissan, the redemption, the giving of the Torah, having Torah mitzvah. We go free on a cosmic level, and that, in a sense, is the redemption of the entire world. And so that is the significance of going out of Egypt on a daily basis, and the tremendous power that there is in the whole idea of the going out of Egypt, that it's really a cosmic event. And it's a cosmic event which transforms the whole of existence. And thank God we are part of it, and on the countdown to the Seder nights and the organizing the home for Pesach, you know, that's getting the matzah and so on. That's all part of the process.